non-natives gaining control. And to me, I really don't see how that's going to be prevented. Some of the stock is going to filter out, I think. And one of the things that Doyen has done is sought to look for a non-native person to run the corporation. Now, that you could say would be good for management, but this disenchantment that was mentioned earlier, I think, is going to be more predominant because of this. I mean, it's just a bad outlook that stockholders have on somebody outside the corporation running the corporations. To me, it's, if somebody from outside the corporation can manage the money and the companies, then that's fine. But I think that a lot of older, elderly people in the corporation and myself, kind of looks down upon that. So I would like to see somebody within, Doyon run the corporation. Now, I don't know if that's a practical thing. I don't know if we have somebody that can do that because of the large financial loss Doyon, what happened this year with the $23 million loss. But basically, that's all I have to say. I just wanted to agree with what Ronnie had to say about using the land and, traditionally.
Excuse me, Mr. Olson, there's just one question. You made a proposal that I just want to make sure I understood it. You said Doyon is the largest private landholder in the U.S. It was Doyon lands that you suggested might be transferred to individual native persons, perhaps by lottery or some other means.
She claimed that area, and everybody got kind of quiet. And I was thinking, what does she mean by that? Where before everybody was free to go to wherever they want to go. I guess that's.
Thank you very much, Ms. Moses.
My name is John F. Moses. I'm enrolled in Chelista, and I'm from Mnemonic. I'd like to say a few words. The utmost good faith shall always be observed toward the Indians, and their land and property shall never be taken away without their consent, and their property rights and liberty they will never shall be invaded or disturbed unless it is just and lawful laws authorized by Congress. This powerful statement of the United States policy toward the Indian found expressed in the Northwest Ordinance Act. It represents the white man's attitude toward two separate ideas, the Indian land claims and good faith. That is the whole general attitude about American society toward the native Indian. When speaking about Alaska, Alaska represents a garden of plenty. The Alaskan natives lived in a balanced cycle. By living in a balanced cycle, I mean that they did not know that the Alaskan natives were conservationists. Because of the life, game was plenty, the rivers, great abundance of various of kinds of species of fish and sea mammals, and native harvest according to their needs to survive. The land to the natives is unlimited for
of social change and add them to the basic structure and functioning of the Native Claims Settlement Act, it seems to me it represents a fairly extraordinarily cumulative impact on every aspect of community and individual life. And in this semester in our Alaska Native Social Change class, students and I have been looking at these issues of social change. At the beginning of the course, we spent some time reviewing portions of your Mackenzie Valley Pipeline study, which we concluded really, it was an assessment of a possible environmental impact of that particular proposal, but it, as we read through and discussed your analysis of the situation, it seemed to me that you were talking about describing Native social life, putting together a very comprehensive description of a Native economy, that in fact it did exist, and that it had some very unique aspects to it that differentiated, made it different from the northern industrial development conditions that were emerging in Canada and emerging here in Alaska. One of the things we seem to be able to do is kind of list the factors that seem to be affecting or changing the social and physical environment of Native communities. And I guess I've tried to list some of those. And then on the other side of the ledger, we seem to be able to observe and identify certain social outcomes. Social change and social costs and problems seem to go hand in hand. People talk about Native social change at the same time. The conversation or the discussion, the analysis can switch to social problems. But you have this one list of the inputs, the factors that seem to be contributing to changes, cultural, social, psychological changes, which
My name is John F. Moses. I spoke earlier this morning and got a chance to think about a few more items I'd like to place on record. First of all, I'm taking a class at the Alaska Native, the Native Leadership Program here on the campus. And one of the people that we had a videotape was Ramsey Clark. I'd like to quote something that he said and also refer in my own words of what I think about the words he said. We knew we wanted something bold, new, and something different and possible. Something that would really give Native people the power to maintain their nativeness, their Native way, with the economic viability to as they chose. If I could relate that quote from Ramsey Clark, the first wording, we knew we wanted something bold and new. We may be or can refer to the preparing workings of natives, the Native leaders before the passage of the Act. Something different and possible would refer to the leading up to the passage of ANSCA, which was different in any way it was written for the corporations within Alaska and was possible because it became an act. I respect Mr. Clark because he respects the natives and realizes making up the state. The character he was speaking about is knowing who you are, and I believe we do know who we are, our identity, culture, heritage that make the economic and social change of our environment. And we want, and what we believe in, Clark stated that the major knowledge based on the true came from experience. The experience was in the native people, and that they are one that told us it's the land. The native people of the place, a chance to choose from all that they had, land they wanted the most, to preserve it, to live on it, and with it. He spoke of afterborns and the land. And during his speech, I remembered something to the effect that, quote, so remember that no generation is wise enough to make all the decisions of the generations in the future. And none should be ironic enough to want to, but to find a formula now including the future. I believe Mr. Clark sums the speech as to the effect sometimes that would really give Native people the power to maintain their nativeness in their native way with the economic viability and preserve nativeness.
My name's Willie Templeton. I come from Anchorage. I'm an at-large shareholder with Cook Inlet Region. I was hoping to have something prepared, but I really don't have anything prepared. But I thought maybe I would just talk about what it is my perception as being an at-large shareholder in SERI and what I think of the Claims Act. Sometimes I really question whether the corporations really speak for the shareholders. I feel that I am fairly well educated on corporations and how it works, but, and yet I find it quite confusing when I get the shareholders' reports and the whole proxy system. I'm aware of how the proxy system works now, but when I see some of my friends, they just send in their proxy just thinking that they must do that in order to hold a meeting. And sometimes, it's from my perception in Cook Inlet Region, it's kind of hard to make generalizations because each region is different and each region is unique. But Cook Inlet Region is an urban region in Anchorage. But it's my perception that somehow, or many times, the board of directors may not speak for the shareholders, and the shareholders are unaware of how they could really get effective input into the corporation.
My name is Dana Lewis, and I'm a shareholder of the Bristol Bay Native Corporation. And this Alaska Native Studies class was really my first introduction to the issues and the problems facing Alaska Natives, so I can't really make an educational, you know, have an educational viewpoint. There are two cases in particular that are really personal to me that I'd like to bring up that might point out some of the problems in the claims settlement. I was raised in a primarily non-Native community in the Otna region, but I'm a shareholder in the Bristol Bay Corporation, and I found that was kind of my identity, and I know that it wasn't just me personally, because my sister, one of my sisters, isn't included in the act, and she felt like she wasn't as Native because she wasn't part of it. And I see that problem, and I think that they should be included. I like to see, just like Kathy said, I like to see that there is interest for these people because there's so many of them, and there will be so many if we don't take care of them soon enough. And another example is my mom was interested in developing her land that she'd received, and she was looking into a deal that she could have a house built on her land in exchange for some land to a nearby village corporation. And then a different non-Native party showed interest in developing on her land, and she was considering exchanging his services for a part of her land, even though he wasn't Native. And I told her, why don't you give it to the village corporation? It's for Natives. You shouldn't give it away. And she said that they intended to turn around and sell it to white people anyways. And I don't think that on that level there should be the option to give away. I don't think, you know, on a personal level, if the land is more a personal, if it's yours, then I think that, you know, if we allow people to do that, then they should be able to take advantage of selling it. You know, it's their own land. But with the regional or the village corporations, I think they should be limited with what they could do with the land. I think that they should have more responsibilities to the Natives. And I don't know if this is just a problem exclusive in the Bristol Bay region or if it's statewide, I'm not sure. And it's not really much to say, but I hope I can contribute. I'm
college in the East Coast, and I have a degree in economics. I studied economics not because I was very interested in it, but because of ANCSA. I wanted to understand how the corporate structure works. And I learned, but I feel no motivation to go back to where I'm from and do anything about it because I am totally disillusioned in the way it is run. I'm disappointed in the Natives themselves, in myself, because my grandmother always told me that you had to be better, you had to be smarter, because you're different, you're a minority, and you're also white, and you had to take the best of both worlds and stick them together. And I don't feel that most Natives in the corporate structure are doing that. I think they're emulating the worst possible things in our modern society and taking that and putting it into their corporations. They're making decisions that will affect their great-grandchildren, and they're not really taking that into consideration. It's always today or maybe next year. They want to look good on paper now. They're not thinking ahead far enough. And sure, they're worried about 1991, but they should have been worried about that from the beginning. As far as taxes, I wonder sometimes if the land claims was just a big ripoff. I wonder if the government realized that by taxing the land, eventually they'd get it all back. Because how are most corporations going to pay taxes on that land? It's such a huge amount of land. I just don't see how they expected people to be able to pay taxes on it. Fortunately, Native allotments are exempt from taxation because they're under the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And I inherited some land, so I'll have some. But what about the other people who aren't as lucky? I really do believe that most of the land will revert back to the federal government or the state government because of corporations' inability to pay taxes in the future. It might not happen in 1991, but it will happen. If I'm speaking, assuming that Natives remain in control of their corporations past 1991, which I don't think my corporation will be able to do because of the disillusionment of its stockholders.
Thank you. How do you spell your last name, Ms.? Oh, H-Y-K-S. Sorry, H-Y-K-E-S. Thank you very much. These presentations have been very thought-provoking, so if there are any more that that you have, I'd certainly like to hear from you, because I've been very impressed at the knowledge of the issues that that you've shown this afternoon, and you've raised some very good points.
My name's Matt Gamley of Fairbanks, and I have to say first that my experience with ANCS is limited, except that I had done some work for the cemetery historic site work in Alaska for it. And this is under Section 14H1, and what that does is sets aside a certain amount of acreage for transferal to the native corporations from federal and state lands. And our job was to go out and investigate the sites, meaning talking to elders, learning the stories that are associated with that, and confirming whether the site is there or not, which is the point that I'd like to pursue. It seems that with this section of ANCSA, Section 14H1, that the federal government seemed to establish itself in a good position for contracting either its agencies under the Department of Interior or other outside agencies to complete this work. And within the section, it seemed that there was no control of the quality of work that was done, as well as enough active involvement of the people in the area. It seems to me that these sites of historic significance, that there's stories associated with that, and that the site, whether there be what in the language is termed cultural features, meaning houses or something of that nature there, is often whether, will often determine whether that site is transferred or not. And I found it kind of appalling in a lot of cases that it seems that sites will probably, I was only in the position of a field assistant at that time, so I basically just did a lot of the footwork and had nothing to do with the turning of the reports, but it seemed that,
you know, without which common identity, the, you know, people are concerned now that the corporations could fall apart in, you know, in any one of various ways. Some of the corporations I've seen, well, one corporation in particular has begun to address itself to issues of culture, and that's the Northwest Arctic Native Association, with their Inupiaq Spirit Movement. The Michael Krauss referred to the North Slope, and there, as I understand it, it's especially the North Slope Borough, which has set up the Language and History Commission to deal with culture. And to my, I don't know of any involvement that the corporation itself has had with Native language and culture. I would like to see other corporations follow the lead of Northwest Arctic and get involved in the culture area. It's not a luxury. They have to do it if they're going to, you know, continue to bind the people together into a cohesive force, because that is the cohesion of the corporation. that's where it derives its strength.
Thank you, Mr. Kaplan. Does anyone else wish to make a statement?
My name is Lincoln Tritt. I'm from Arctic Village. I'm under the Native Village of Inuit Tribal Government, so I'm not a shareholder in any corporation. My impression of the land claim is it's more like being shoved into the white man's world. As far as I can see, I don't think the natives are ready to deal in the kind of business that white men are used to. The rules are all white man's rules. So even now, in almost 10 years since a little more than 10 years since the land claims, there's some problems. In order to pay tax on all that land that the natives got, they have to be pretty rich, and the natives, the system is not set up to make natives rich. Even if they are rich, they wouldn't know what to do with them. So. And there's been a lot of achievement tests that's been done in the native schools and other schools and city or rural schools, and there's a lot of reports of natives being behind in the school, but that's the way it has to be. The natives is learning two cultures, two ways of life. So they have to work extra hard, and it takes them a little longer. There's been some changes at home where what was important to me as a child is not as important to the kids up there right now. When I was growing up, learning to survive in the woods was very important to us. Now to the kids up there, it's just a game. They really don't have to worry about survival, because everything is, if you have money, you can survive. Everything is moved right into them, everything is given to them. There's three.